Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
And good morning to you. I'm Andy. Oh, thanks for tuning in today on a gorgeous, I mean, we're talking about gorgeous spring morning here in Utah's Dixie. I'm here with Dr. David Blodgett. He's going to spend a little time with us today, give us some counseling. Good doctor's going to counsel us, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Now here I am.
We are going to give away a couple of Clay Travis books, American Playbook, a little bit later on in the program. I'm really glad you're here with us this morning, Dr. Blodgett, but also the listeners. I appreciate that.
Yep, great opportunity.
Today, I thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about humans and animals, our interaction with them. And, of course, I'm not really talking about, like, bears and tigers and, you know, wild animals there and things like that. They're not good for your health, bears and tigers and things like that. But they're also not something that... Not too many of us are going to die from a bear attack.
Those interactions are pretty rare.
Yeah. I did want to talk about, though, animals that we do spend a lot of time with and around, and that is our pets and how pets have to do with public health. There are a lot of myths with your animals, and there are a lot of truths with your animals. And so I thought it would be good to get an expert's take on some of this stuff. So, you ready?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, I don't know that we have a ton of information or data on pets particularly, but I'll tell you what we have there. There's some, but yeah. There is this whole branch of public health we call zoonotic medicine.
Zoonotic?
Yeah. Mm. So, zoonotic. Yeah. It's the interaction of animals and with humans. And so, there is an extensive portion of the whole spectrum of human disease that comes from interaction with animals, and all the way from the lowly mosquito, which is actually the deadliest of all the animals,
animal on the planet,
and other diseases that can be spread mostly by interaction of insects with animals and with humans. So there's these vector transmission routes that create all kinds of it's a fascinating world to study, but it's also difficult to figure out how to stop that transmission sometimes,
Well, one of the things I've learned from you over the years, Dr. Blodgett, is that you can recommend that, things we need to do to be healthier as a society, and once we've made our mind up, it doesn't matter what you recommend, we're going to do it anyway. And that's kind of the way with some of the pets that we have. There are certain habits we have around our animals and pets that we ignore the experts and just do stuff anyway.
Well, I think there is definite health benefits for some, for probably a lot, to have a pet.
There's sure.
A mental health association, it's companionship, it's, all of that. They can do studies where they show if you're stressed, your stress levels go down if you have an animal there, those kinds of things. So I don't doubt that for many of us, there's real value in companionship from the animals that we have around us. There is the other side, though. For some, some people are anaphylactically responsive to animals, right? They'll end up in the hospital. And there's a lot of us that just have good old allergies as a result of exposure to animals. So I very unfortunately end up in that group. So cats anywhere within about, 100 meters of me, I'm sneezing. And I think people forget that side of things. So we have laws in public health about animals in public places for a number of reasons. One, they can spread disease, right? Mm-hmm. Two, there are a good number of people, highly significant number of people, probably as many as a quarter in the population that respond very negatively to animals in the environment. So I think a lot of people view this as a crusading issue. Well, I should be able to take my pet wherever I want to. But the answer is no, that's not the right thing. That's not the way to view this, because you're inflicting your animal on somebody else. A lot of service animals are selected specifically because they are less likely to engender that kind of thing, and maybe you can avoid that. But a lot of you see it a lot more now than you've ever seen. People that just think that they ought to be able to take their dog or whatever
anywhere. Yeah.
And so there's sanitary issues in restaurants. There and in, you know, places where you buy food and things like that. But then there's also just good decency to other people to not, you know, cause them to have significant health issues as a result of your pet being a place where it shouldn't be.
I grew up in a house. We always had cats and dogs. It was a pet house. And when I got engaged and eventually married to my sweetheart, I learned that she gets very, very sick. She has asthma induced by pet dander.
Yeah.
And to the point where it's life-threatening to her. Like, her airways close up tight and she can hardly breathe if she's around furry animals, especially certain ones, right? Like
right.
cats, but right. furry right. animals for very long. And so I went from one side of the tracks that the pets should be everywhere, almost like you said, Milton, I want to take me to the other side. Like, why? There was a recent story in the news about America. I think it was American Airlines allowing you're now allowed to bring your pet on the passenger cabin of their airlines with you. And to me, I look at these and I go, do they understand that there are people like Dr. Blodgett here with cats, like my wife with pet dander, that will get very, very sick if they're around an animal, especially in a closed atmosphere for very long?
You know, one of the arts, part of the art and skill of trying to do things on a regulatory level like, you know, government does, is how do you get that balance between what's right and what's wrong? And I don't know that we get it right, but you try to do the best fit you can, you know. And so legislatively in our country, usually almost universally across the country, it's illegal to bring your animal into a place where you can expose others to that without it being a bona fide certified service animal. And so just because that's a health risk to those that are around.
I had a conversation with one of the greeters at Costco a couple of months ago. And he said, you would not believe how many people order a vest off of Amazon, a little doggy vest off of Amazon. And when they try to go into my store with their animal, they say, he's a service animal. And he said, first of all, having been trained in what is and what isn't a service animal, he says they're easy to spot when they're not really.
Right.
And he says, generally speaking, there's also documentation involved. If there's a question, they should be able to produce documentation involved with that being a service animal. He said, you know, 95% of the ones that come through with animals are not service animals.
Right. So, well, and service animals play a vital role, right? If it's a seeing eye dog or mm-hmm. something like that, you need that around. But when you dilute that down or try and make it, it makes all of it more difficult, right? I'm sure I'm not helping the issue, but there's reasons why those laws are in place, and it sure seems like we're headed into chaos in some of this. It's hard for restaurant owners; they don't mm-hmm. want to be the bad guys, you know.
Right?
It's really inconsiderate. It really is.
Is public demand, public sentiment winning out over common sense?
So far, the law has been consistent. But,
so not yet.
But we'll see if the law can change, right? And so then what do you do if you routinely can't go to restaurants anymore because people are there with their animals and you sanitary wise, you know, you don't really want to eat in a place like that. And and if you are responsive to that, if you have some sort of an allergy or asthma like your wife, that becomes you can't do it kind of thing, you know. And so we try and make the law so that the greatest number of people have the greatest amount of good, and we'll see.
There, I don't want to overstate this, but if someone were to, my wife and I are taking a trip this in August, where we'll be on an airplane for a long period of time, I could tell you if someone were to sneak a cat onto the into the cabin during this airplane trip, my wife would be, her life would be in peril.
Yeah.
And I know I always being dramatic. No, I'm not being dramatic. This is the honest truth. She's been to the emergency room from pet induced dander. It happens, and I hope we don't get to that point. You know,
there's always a debate, and yeah. a balance, and yeah. and but it often seems like in our modern society, it's all about what I want, not what. Would be, you know, kind What's of a greater best? Good kind yeah. of argument. And,
story of your life, right?
Yeah, there seems to be no end.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the basics of pet ownership and, you know, kind of making sure that we're safe health-wise. I have a friend who's, she'll put something in her mouth and the dog will lick it out of her mouth or off of her lips or whatever. And I just think to myself, is that sanitary? Should she be doing that? And the answer is probably not, right?
I don't know. You know, I mean, people do what they're going to do. I'm not going to die.
Oh, come on now. I understand. I understand.
There. You don't wanna be, yeah. I think we recognize for most of us, that's just someplace we're not going to go. But
whatever. Most of us, but not all of us. Okay, what about other pets? Are there dangers of things for other pets we might have? We're going to get into pests and mosquitoes and rats and things like that later, but other things we should be worried about with other pets, for instance, if you have a guinea pig or if you have a lizard or you have whatever.
You know, it's interesting, and just like people, pets have diseases that they mm-hmm. carry too, and they can be a problem for them, but they can also be a problem for people. And people. So
some of them do, what do you call it, co-species transfer,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah, yeah. Interspecies
transfer. Interspecies, that's it.
Transfer. So we have so one of the most common we run into is salmonella,
mm-hmm.
Particularly in reptiles, can be in chicks. You know, you go to, you know, the farm supply store and all the chicks are there.
Easter,
and,
yeah,
know, those and they can have salmonella, so you end up having salmonella. And we've had situations where that salmonella ends up in little babies, you know, that end up in the ICU that are, you know, really fragile or something like that. And so so they're not, you don't hear about it a ton, but I think that there's more there than we think there is. And some of these are really significant diseases. So we had a big outbreak, I don't know if you remember talking about this probably 5 years ago, of a disease called, it was from E. coli, but it was a certain strain of E. coli called 015787, S-Tec, where you get bloody diarrhea as a result of that, but in kids, a lot of times it will attack their kidneys, and so they end up with hemolytic uremic syndrome, they call it, which is their kidneys fail. And they end up in the ER, and we had a couple of kids die, right? And so that
I was gonna say, it could kill you.
Yeah, so that's associated a lot of times with cattle, horses, livestock, things like that, but it can be in even in just chickens and things like that. So there's these kind of cleanliness issues of making sure you wash your hands if you're around animals, and you hate it when the answer is either exercise or wash your hands, right? But it's but it's kind yeah. of in that realm for all of it. And is it always there? No. Is it sometimes there? Yeah, you know, every now and then. And then there's even, we think about birds, and they carry a, you know, psittacosis, it's called, which can cause blindness in newborn babies. There's just some kinds of things. There's bacteria that can end up in aquariums that, you know, if you have a cut and you stick your hand in the aquarium, you can end up getting infected. But these are all living is life, right? And there's just risks associated with it. I think the general the general rules always apply. Wash your hands, and be careful to notice when you're being exposed to bacteria and things like that. But in general, I think pets are, on balance, a good way to go.
The a couple of recommendations. This is from the CDC website. People that are at higher risk for these diseases, right. Children under 5, seniors over 65, people with a weakened immune systems, and women who are pregnant, all should be ones that avoid certain animals, especially reptiles, amphibians, and backyard poultry.
Yeah, I mean, the one universal recommendation we always have is cats around pregnant women, because there's a disease called toxoplasmosis that they transmit through their feces that can be very devastating to an unborn baby. So just to be aware of.
And the sad thing is, and I'm going to be gross here, but just because it's I don't handle the feces well. Your cat does.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you touch their paws or their face or wherever. And again, Dr. Blodge is about wash your hands after touching or playing with your pet. Wash your hands. Especially if you're planning on handling any food whatsoever in the next little while. Make sure your hands are washed after handling pets. So
here's the question. Do you always have to wash your hands in water for it to be effective, or does hand sanitizer work sometimes?
Great question. They would have us believe that hand sanitizer is pretty good, right? It'll do the trick.
Yeah. So there are sometimes you really should wash your hands with water, and that includes when you're going to eat. If you're changing a diaper or something, like that. If you're going to the bathroom after that, you really should. There are some times when just good old soap and water just does a better job. If you see physical dirt on your hands, you really should wash your hands.
Yeah.
But as a in-between measure, hand sanitizer does a pretty good job. If there isn't actual debris there, but just, the kind of life.
Kill the bacteria, so. Yeah. I had never washed my hands so good as when I started smoking meat, because if you get any of that black stuff when you're smoking meat on your hands, you have to scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub to get that stuff off. So, washing hands has taken on a whole new meaning to me. We are going to give away Clay Travis's American Playbook here in just a minute. And, of course, you're always welcome to call and be a part of the show. 673-5890 is the phone number. You can text me. I will look at my phone now. I haven't been the first little while of the show, but you can text me at 467-5842. We're talking with Dr. Blodgett, who is the director of the Southwest Utah Public Health Department, in charge of 5 counties. Approximately, 300,000 people-ish?
We're getting close. Yeah, we're growing dramatically. When I first came here, it was about 150,000, 160,000.
So almost double, huh?
We're growing quickly.
I don't know how you feel about this one. Today is the anniversary. The 4 years ago today, the CDC recommended all people wear face coverings to prevent the spread of COVID-19. That's it. An anniversary. I don't know that we want to remember too much.
Oh, the fond memories of the past.
You know what? Kudos to Dr. Blodgett, though. He came on all through COVID and everything. He was on the show and part of it all through that whole interesting time in all of our lives. So when they told us not to go to church and visit grandma and stuff like that.
We're in a phase where we're trying to decide what the next pandemic should look like, and I'm hoping for more calmness as a society. We'll see how that goes. But
all right, Vic is on line one. He wants to ask about health inspections. Vic, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, and really quick. There was a national chain restaurant to remain nameless, and they had some outbreaks where people were getting sick, so they shut down the whole chain and retrained all their employees, and then they reopened again. And my wife says, well, I'm not going back there. A whole bunch of people get sick. And I said, sweetheart, it's been 8 months, and I love the place. Let's go back. So we went back, and both of us got diarrhea. So, and, you know, it's this age-old story. Listen to the wife. They know best. But anyway, I've been here since 2006. I was smart enough to leave California back then. But they had all these restaurant ratings, A, B, C, and all this other stuff. But here in Utah, you don't see that. And I'm just wondering, does the health department have inspections, or do you have to wait till someone, you know, gets sick and then, you know, reports it to the health department?
No, that's a central function we provide. We go in and inspect the restaurant site. There's several requirements on restaurants that are geared towards this. One, they have to have a certified food manager on staff at all times that has been through a fairly extensive course on how to keep food safe. All of everybody that cooks food has to have a food handler card. They've been at least through some basic training on that. And then we'll go in and inspect them.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but there's quite a few restaurants here, and, you know, as far as how many people work for the health department, I mean, how often, let's just take one restaurant in particular, you know, just one, how often would that one restaurant be inspected during the year?
Well, that's what I was going to get to, is it still always depends on the vigilance of the place, right? So we try to get there at least twice a year, and if we know they're high risk or we've had issues with them, we'll go back more frequently than that.
But
that's two snapshots in time, right?
Do they know you're coming when you go?
Generally not.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So we do a surprise inspection most of the time, but the problem is. Like I said, that's your one snapshot, right? And in some ways, you're your own best inspector, right? If you see things you notice that just don't seem like they're the way they should be, you know, comments from people really make a big difference. And you made a comment about some of the bigger national chains. They actually have their own. Inspectors that'll come around and you know, kind of bolster that effort, but really it comes down to the diligence of the staff as they're cooking. You know, it's a daily activity, and there's all of these, you got to keep the hot food hot and separated foods and all those kinds of things that are a constant ongoing requirement of keeping food safe. And so it's the culture of the restaurant, it's how seriously that staff takes those activities. And it really shows in a place when you go there, and so just paying attention, making sure that you.
I don't know if you ever seen Restaurant Impossible, but you see some of those kitchens in the back, and you say to yourself, "I'm never going to a restaurant again."
Yeah,
out front doesn't look too bad, but in the back kitchen, oh my God!
Yeah, I would make a comment about the grading system too. We have this debate in the state. Should we go to a grading system or not? Part of the problem with the grading system is people trumpet that like that, you know, is...
We got an A.
You know,
look at this.
We're perfect. Or if they get a bad grade, and you know, then it can really damage. And they fix it, then it comes right back off. But it isn't really an indicator of where they are, right?
Yeah.
It's that snapshot approach, unfortunately. And what we're really after is a good relationship with them so that we can go in and you know, fix things and have a good relationship between the health department and those restaurants so that good things are happening and they're willing to call us if they have questions and things like that. And that system kind of creates an animosity where they'll hide things, you know.
Yeah.
It's like that all-important rating is what they're after. And so... Mm-hmm. So we've kind of avoided that. We do have periodically, if we're having trouble with a restaurant, we'll post them on our website or we'll go on their Yelp account and say these guys are bad actors kind of things. But we have our ways of trying to make sure that, you know, if they're not safe or if they're bad enough, we'll just close them down. The grading system is not an effective tool. At least that's what we've discovered over time. So.
I will say this. Once you've had an experience with a restaurant, you, the consumer, will maybe even grade them yourselves in your mind.
Yeah.
Stupid little story, but gosh, it would have been like 1997 or something. We went to a restaurant that is still open here in town. And while we were in the waiting room to be seated, I leaned against a poster that was on the wall. And as I leaned against it, a cockroach crawled out from behind the poster. We left. we have not been back. Now, it's stupid. I mean, the cockroaches in St. George are pretty ubiquitous. I mean, they're everywhere, right? But for me, that was a sign I didn't want to eat there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what amount of grading or health, whatever, since then that place has had. I just know that I don't want to go back there.
Yeah. My favorite story in that line is I was in line in a restaurant in Vegas once, and I was looking at their grading card, and I thought, wow, that's, you know, should we do that? Should we not? And a cockroach ran right across the grading card.
So. What kind of grade are you going to give it, cockroach? So. All right, we're talking with Dr. Blodgett today. Let's give away one of those books, American Playbook by Clay Travis. Call right now, 673-5890. Stockton will talk to you and hand out one of those books. Again, it's American Playbook by Clay Travis. Give me a call right now, and we'll give you a copy. 673-5890.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Thanks for participating in the show today, and congratulations to Trace. Trace won one of those books. We're going to give away another one here in less than 10 minutes. So have your fingers ready to dial in and get a free copy of Clay Travis's American Playbook. In just a minute, Dr. Blodgett was telling me he listens to books in his car, I guess, and at like double speed. So that you can
yeah,
listen
well, that
to
way
it quicker,
get more done, right?
So. Is it hard to understand it sometimes at that fast?
Sometimes some books you just can't do that way, but most books it really works well. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's like speed reading, only audio version.
Yeah, I think comprehension's about the same. So for me, at least, but
very cool. We're not all as smart as you are.
No, it's just what I do.
That's what you do. That's okay. Let's talk about pests a little bit. We had pets with one S. Now pests with two S's surrounding the T. What are some of the diseases and public health hazards with some of the pests that we have? When I think pests, I think cockroaches, rats and mice, maybe spiders, lizards and snakes, scorpions even. What are some of the things as public health problems with some of those?
Yeah, well.
A lot, I know.
These are all the words of wisdom we learned from our mothers growing up. Mm-hmm. Right? And sometimes it depends on just how sensitive you are to those things. Sometimes it's once you're exposed, then it's worse kind of thing. Bee stings, for example. But we have some things that are unique to our area that I think are important to know about. One is we live in a part of the world that has a viral hemorrhagic fever. So viral hemorrhagic fevers are really nasty diseases that, you know, cause bloody blood coming from every pore kinds of diseases. Ooh. You know, the Ebolas of the world, right? So these are these are the nasty diseases. We actually have one here.
Really?
Yeah, kills 2 or 3 people a year usually, and we just don't pay much attention to it. When it first came out, there wasn't a name for it. It was when it was first identified, perhaps 5 or 10 years ago, and we just hadn't. It just hadn't been on anybody's radar screen. So they actually named it the no name disease, sin nombre. Right?
Really?
It actually sounds pretty ominous, sin nombre.
Sin
but
nombre, yeah.
But we might know it as hantavirus. So hantavirus is in the mice of the area, deer mice, in mice feces. So a lot of times the story is someone goes in, they open their cabin up,
there's
a lot of feces
everywhere,
all over the place.
It doesn't even really look like feces either.
Right.
Usually it's just little dots.
Right. They don't think much of it. They clean it up. But every now and then, you know, we've had, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the state of Utah every year since then. And so, and usually those are 20% or 30% fatal kind of thing, events, you know?
Man.
So,
we don't want to panic anybody, but that sounds terrible.
It's not a panic thing because it's really rare, but just being aware of it, right? So if you got a lot of mouse feces and you're worried about it, or you should just think about it, at least the solution is spray it down with bleach before you collect it, so you don't get that dust, with a lot of dust in the air that you're inhaling, you know. So maybe wear a face mask if you think about it. So every time I end up in a situation like that, I always think about it, and we try and do the right thing. But but you know, it's always when you're at your cabin, you forgot to bring bleach, and you just, so I don't have a cabin, right? But it's somebody else's cabin or something like that. But
I understand. Yeah.
So just, you know, some of these things you just don't think about or know about, and then it hits the news, and everybody gets all excited about it, and then it, you know, doesn't hit the news for a little while.
You forget about it; it goes away, and then it's back.
So this next one, I might surprise you. So
okay.
In Middle Ages Europe, about a third of the population was wiped out by the Black Death, yeah. Right? That was a bacteria called Yersinia pestis, perhaps one of the most deadly diseases of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Wiped out probably half of London. There's still cities in Europe, and England in particular, that they're just rubble. But nobody bothered to even go back and try and live there after everybody died from the plague. It was tremendously impactful, you know, probably killed 70 or 80 million in a time when there was probably only 200 million on the planet, right? I mean, just unbelievable numbers.
Wow.
And so, so what happened to it? Nobody exactly knows.
I was going to say it went away, didn't it? Like, somehow?
Just became less of a problem, but it still exists.
Oh.
So the question is, where does it still exist?
Yeah, and can I get it? Because I don't want it.
And the answer is in small rodents in southern Utah.
Really?
Yes. So we have
the Black Death.
The Black Death is still here among us. And so we have probably every year 3 or 4 prairie dog colonies that will pick it up, and the fleas, they'll pass the fleas amongst themselves, and the colony will collapse, and so we end up with 1 or 2 cases of the plague every now and then, right? Probably since I've been health officer here 20 years, I bet there's been 7 or 8 outbreaks of the plague in the prairie dogs, and probably 3 or 4 human cases and 2 deaths, right? Which is strange to think about, people still dying from the plague. So so the message I always relay with that one and animals is, if it's an animal that you usually can't catch, or you see it at a strange time, or it's acting strangely, it's usually an exceedingly bad idea to touch that animal or pick it up or something like that. I'll give you the example of somebody that died from plague. They were a big outdoors person. They were hiking. They found a dead cougar, of all things.
Okay.
A mountain lion.
Yeah.
Took it home. They were going to stuff it. They, you know, they were gutting it out and everything. Turns out the cougar got some infected prairie dogs and ate them, and died itself, but it was infected with plague. So this person got infected with plague and ended up dying from an infected cougar that they found, which is, how can you write that storyline? I just don't know. But
was a person who was normally otherwise healthy. But
right.
There's nothing wrong with them. They messed with this cougar that had gotten infected, right, and they died.
They were a very healthy person.
Wow.
So the big one we usually talk about when we talk about with animals is rabies.
Mm-hmm.
Most 95% of the time when we're talking rabies in this area, it's bat rabies. There's various strains of rabies, but the bats here will at times have rabies. And so if you are in contact with rabies, or you see rabies in a bat in your home at strange times, or whatever, bats are something to take seriously. We have a rabies vaccine that we can give to you if you are exposed to a bat. You know, it's 4 shots, it's at the ER, you know, it's tremendously expensive. So here's the story. Girl's out running, right? She sees, you know, with her dog, there's something flopping off the side of the trail. The dog starts to head off after it. She pulls him back with the leash and reaches down to grab whatever it is so the dog won't get it.
Uh-oh.
It's a bat.
She gets bit.
So she ends up, you know, with shots and, you know, a $3,000 or $4,000, you know, ER bill. So,
well, at least she didn't die, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's better than dying. Yeah. And rabies is something to very carefully consider. It's actually, after accidents, the number two cause of death for travelers worldwide, believe it or not.
Really? Rabies? Yeah.
Rabies is much more common in other parts of the world, and paying attention to that is actually something to be cognizant of. So
now I'm paranoid.
Now,
Black Death and rabies, I'm scared. So.
Before we go too much further, we do have a travel clinic at our office.
Okay.
When you're going to travel to foreign places, it's helpful to go there. They can make sure you have all the right shots and things like that.
Okay. We're going on a trip this summer, so maybe I need to stop by.
Yeah. Particularly South America, Africa, Southeast Asia, those kinds of places. Make sure you have, you know, all the right things in order.
Me, I'm going to the home of the Black Death, Europe. So
the other big thing is mosquitoes in that arena. So
okay, let's put a pin in mosquitoes for just one second. Okay. I got to get a commercial break in. Also, call right now for a copy of American Playbook by Clay Travis, 673-5890, 673-5890 for American Playbook. A copy of the book just for you. By Clay Travis.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Welcome back. 954 on KDXU. Gary won it, so Trace and Gary are winners today. We are going to be giving away more books all next week until I run out. There's a stack right there. When those are gone, they're gone. But I read the book. It's a good book, American Playbook by Clay Travis. Dr. Blodgett is with me today. We're down to the last 5 minutes or so of the program. I noticed on the Newswire they're talking about already 100 cases of the measles in the United States in 2024. We're in April. There were 57 all of last year. Health officials are saying, well, some people are just deciding that, well, COVID vaccine didn't work for me, so I'm not going to take any vaccines, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a problem with nationwide. We're seeing decreasing rates of vaccination, and the measles vaccine is the prototypical awesome vaccine because it really works, right? Yeah. One shot, you're never going to get measles. But if you're not vaccinated, measles itself is unbelievably easy to spread, right? Somebody walks through a room and has measles and you're unvaccinated, you're exposed. You're going to get it. I don't know if you remember, we talked about R-naught, how many people get the disease from everybody that has the disease.
Right.
You know, for COVID, it was 1.2 or something like that. For flu, it's about 2, some, you know, in that range. For measles, it's 14 or 16. It's an unbelievable disease that way. It truly hangs in the air and you inhale it. There's just no way around. Vaccination has been just such an amazing blessing. You know, 5,000 kids a year in America used to die from measles and we just don't see that anymore. And so, we'll see measles hit. We're seeing it's the exemption rate. You can opt out of vaccinations here in our area go up. And, everybody thinks that's a great idea until they start to get some of these diseases. And then they realize, yeah, that wasn't really a good idea. But, it's a cycle. We swing through the cycles all the time.
To be clear, if you've been vaccinated for measles, you're not going, there's a very, 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 very good chance you're not going to get measles.
Yeah, very, very effective.
The diseases, the people that are getting are people that were almost entirely people who were not vaccinated.
It is happening to the unvaccinated. And then they get mad, right? We call them. They're like, this is a terrible disease. We're like, that's true. That's why we vaccinate for it. But it is resurging, and there's this concept we talk about called herd immunity, where there's enough people that are vaccinated that it stops it from spreading.
Yeah,
and we're dropping down. The threshold for that in measles is the highest because it spreads so easily. You have to have like 90-95% of the population vaccinated or have had the disease before it stopped spreading. We really, they declared measles eradicated in North America, but it's, I don't think that's the case now. I think it's becoming endemic, and I think we'll see measles from now on.
What about some of the others? Are any of the others making a comeback? Mumps, rubella, things that tetanus, et cetera?
Yeah, pertussis has been making a big comeback, and pertussis is sad because it's little kids,
yeah.
Right? It's the babies that die from that, and if you've heard the whoop, the cough that sounds like the whoop,
it's
they
awful.
Call it whooping yeah. cough. It'll keep you awake at night, you know, and you have to, they call it the 100-day cough for a reason. It hangs on forever and takes multiple courses of antibiotics sometimes to try and kill it because it's a bacteria. And, you know, the antibiotics have a pretty high side effect profile. So, mm-hmm. So there's, we're entering an uncharted territory after we'd really seen a lot of these diseases diminish dramatically. And, you know, when people haven't seen these, it becomes easy to think they're not a big deal. But when you have them and you see kids die from it, it is a big deal.
Final plug in for today, National Walking Day or Walk with the Doc Day.
Hey.
Are you going to go walking today, Doc?
Of course.
All right.
Yeah, every
All
day.
Right.
You know, walking might be the single best exercise. if you don't do anything, walking is just wonderful. There's no cost. We can all do it. It's available to everybody. And the health benefits associated with it are just tremendous. Mental health, physical health. The answer is often just exercise. So 30 minutes a day, 150 minutes a week, just do it.
It's Dr. Blodgett. I'm Andy. Thanks for listening today. Congratulations again to Trace and to Gary for winning the books today. We'll have more out to you tomorrow. Thank you, Doc.